So you started making a yardstick. So did you make a yardstick, or did you buy a yardstick and do something to it? Because I saw the stories, but you know, I don't have a sound on my phone.
Yeah. Jordan and I were trying to come up with a couple of premium ideas. Well, those would have been premium. So you go to an antique shop, you see these yardsticks. Some of them are flat, maybe like 1.5 inch or 1 1/4 inch by 1/4 inch thick. And that's just, but I always like these square ones. They're tapered. They're longer than, they're like maybe 2 or 3 inches
they
longer
taper?
Than a yard. And they have,
I didn't know
they
that.
Taper. Yeah. It looks like it's, yeah, it's hard to photograph that taper. It's hard to show because all the perspective. But it tapers from about 1 1/8 inches from one end all the way down to about 3/4 on the other end. And that's why it has like this feel, like you know which is the end to hold versus the pointy end. And these yardsticks, I've always collected them. I see them at antique shops and I grab them. And one of them, I even have a 1/4-20 screw in the end so I could put a camera on the end of it, a small GoPro or, you know, those metal cages that sometimes come on the DJI. They screw right into the 1/4-20. So I use it as like a camera pod. And me and Jordan were kicking around ideas, and I was like, you know what? I keep thinking of this idea. Let me work on it. So that day, I got off. We got off on meeting, and I went and I just found a hard piece of maple, and I cut 5 sticks out of it, and I began lasering it. Now, one thing that most people don't realize is that when you laser something, it takes forever. When you try to laser raster something, it takes a long time. So those yardsticks, I made 5 of them in the So that's 5 times 4. So that's 20 sides. That's 30 inches wide or 36 inches wide because I put my sayings on them. Each side took 25 minutes to laser etch. So I was there all day. So those first 5 are worth about $1,000 a piece. Everybody wants to buy them because I misspelled the word straight, of course. And everyone's like, I want one of the first ones. But yeah, so I'm mimicking some old advertising, you know, some of these old hardware premiums that you would have gotten. You went and bought wallpaper, you get a yardstick. And it's just a stupid idea. We'll see what happens.
Well, but I mean, but we were talking before we started recording and talking about promotion, which is, I think, what we're going to try to hit on today. And that's one thing you're really good at is taking advantage of small ideas to see if they can become big ideas. And I was saying that one of my problems is that I bypass small ideas and look for bigger ideas. I don't give the small things an opportunity to become big when it comes to products or promotion. I say low hanging fruit, and that sounds negative, and that's not what I mean. It's just it's an easy get.
Right.
To get started on something which could become something bigger, but I just bypass that often.
Well, I brought up the analogy while we were talking about a supermarket. And in a supermarket, you know, you have what's called lost leaders, and the lost leader is like toilet paper or the essentials that everybody has to go to a supermarket for. Nobody goes shopping for the best price in toilet paper. Well, my dad probably does. But there are people that you just go into the store to get that, and then while you're there, you're like, oh, you know what? Let me get Captain Crunch. Let me get a case of diet soda. Let me go to the beauty aisle and buy this $15 bar of soap. So it's called the lost leader. It's just to get you in there. And that's what I think most marketing people need. You need, you know, the push sticks and the yard sticks and the then you put together a package, and then you put together a package that has a razor blade, a knife, a yardstick, and a, you know, and so you put together a gift pack, which is what we always do around Black Friday. And by having all these things, you can make a good value pack out of them versus just everybody coming to your site to buy one $300 thing all the time. And I mean, if you have one $300 thing that sells all the time, good for you. That's great. I'm not saying that's bad. It's just, you know, to get that is more difficult. So when we were developing stuff in the toy business, we would always like, I tend to come up with all these like $5 items, and everybody, my advice that I would get from most of my bigger, more successful friends, they would always say, you need to come up with something that's $50 at retail. So this way you make more money at each sale. So it's a balance. Yeah. To come up with those $50 items, then all of a sudden you need more, this higher stakes. You need to get a company that's willing to do a TV commercial for that product. And then also it's higher stakes when you go to Walmart, because when you sell a $50 item to Walmart, don't forget the strings are attached to that thing for the life of the product. If you sell 100 things to Walmart at $50 and half of them don't sell, you got to buy them back from Walmart if you ever want to sell there again. So you got to take that credit off your next order. So this is a lot. This is a giant balancing act. That's why I say just start a YouTube channel and go craft your fans.
That's the secret right there.
Yeah.
Don't tell anybody. You should bleep that out. I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
Obviously, you're kidding.
Yeah. Well, David, what have you been up to?
I think for 2 or 3 weeks now, I've talked about the video wall, and I think I said last week the video was going to come out, and I decided to work on it just a little bit longer. So it's actually going to come out this week, Sunday at the very latest, but most likely earlier. It came out really good. It was more of a struggle than what I anticipated, trying to get three vertical TVs to work as one. There seems to be some easy options, and then when you purchase those easy options, they don't work as you thought, and then you have to spend more money. So there was a lot of wasted money. Hopefully not too wasted, where I can return or sell some of the things that didn't work. But so that video is coming out next, and I have no idea what the next video we're gonna work on. So I'm just today is one of those days. Like, I need to go through my idea list.
That's always the fear. It's like, you've published that last video, you go, this might be it. There might be an earthquake.
I mean, okay, so in that case, for you, David, specifically, does being at that point of not really knowing what's next, does that bother you? Is that exciting? Is it scary?
It's not the same every time. Sometimes it really bothers me because I really don't know what to do next. There might be something that I'm excited about, but I have to order things and then you have to wait. And then, oh, so since I have to wait, that's not the thing I want to shoot next. But I've got a list of, I think I'm okay. I think I just need to look at the list and then move on to the next thing. I've been in a decent rhythm all year. And so I'm pretty confident that I'll come up with something fun that I'll enjoy. I may have mentioned earlier this year that I've scrapped my entire, I've had a list of hundreds of ideas. I scrapped all of those so I could try to work on something that's a little bit more unexpected. Like we're doing these transformation things where we don't actually know how the project's going to turn out. And that's kind of re-energized me a little bit. And it's forcing me to be a little bit more creative. And I think I'm just in a good place mentally as far as the projects are.
You guys ever have this feeling when you finish a project and it's done and you published and then you look around your room and there's that one project that has its arms folded and it's tapping its foot?
Well, like, usually,
yes.
Like, you're like, I have nothing to do. I don't know what I'm going to do next. Yeah. And you look around.
Man,
and
I'm surrounded by things with their arms folded, tapping their feet.
Yeah. My issue is usually I finish the projects, but I will buy something for future projects that is taking up space or was costly, and that is the thing that's tapping its foot, is the materials or the tool that is for a future project waiting to be used.
Yeah, I have a lot of that as well.
I have a go-kart trailer that I use for. It's supposed to be used for a go-kart. It has turned into storage. If I ever race this year, I don't know what I'm going to do. Because it's going to take me an hour just to unload all the woodworking stuff from the go-kart trailer.
Mm, yeah.
I'm out of space, guys.
Well, you talked about a new shop.
Yeah.
What's the status on that?
That got put on hold because we were looking for that other property to renovate and Airbnb. And to be honest with you, the stress of that really got to me. We came so close on a few properties, and then we would get outbid at the last second, or there was something about the property that wouldn't be rentable. And the ups and downs and the driving back and forth to where we were looking, it just got to be too much. And then at one point I just cracked and I'm like, I don't want to do this anymore. And so I guess the new shop could come back, but as you guys know, that stuff takes a year and a half, 2 years. Like, we had our bathrooms renovated. We signed a contract with this company and they weren't even out here for it took 14 months for them to start the project. So it's, I have a hard time looking that far into the future. Usually I'm just looking to what I'm going to do next week.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Hmm. Well, hopefully you'll find at least a storage unit that you can put your stuff in so you have your trailer back.
Yeah. The dang Impala is in the way. And I hear Jimmy's voice in my head saying, don't get rid of it because it's going to be worth a lot more money in 10 years when there's no more gasoline engines.
But it's funny because when you said that, my thought is Jimmy's voice in the back of your head going, you should buy a second Impala.
Right.
No, I came to that conclusion when I decided to sell the hearse. It was just like, it takes up so much room. I'm not getting the enjoyment out of it that, you know, it is a cool prop in the background and it's in like the back of like 30 videos. And that might be all I need. I would like to have it been a little bit more of a reliable car, but then it needed all the attention. I didn't want to give it. And I doubled my money on it anyway. So it's like, all right, that's good.
Yeah, that's a pretty good deal.
I made room. Now I got room. And then it's funny because then I bought this little Mercedes and Rob's like, now that's going to take up all the space. I said, the difference is I can hop in it and drive it. The Cadillac was like parked and to start it, I had to break out a new battery every time. This I could jump in and move it every time, which I do often. I pull it in and out all the time.
Is that all you do with it? You just pull into the building and then you back out of the building. You're like, cool, I drove it this month.
I'll tell you what, it's been raining so much.
Yeah.
It's been raining like crazy up here. It's like some people say it's the most rain we've gotten in like 20 years upstate. It rains every other day and every morning it's sunny and then it gets cloudy. And so if I go for a drive, I don't want to get caught out in pouring rain somewhere. Because to close the roof on that thing takes about 8 minutes. 700 switches click and snap. And it's like the other day I had it pulled out of the driveway and I looked back and it was pouring rain out and the top was down. And I ran out there and I'm putting the top up. I got soaked in the time it took me to sit in the car and put the top up. It's like, well, I'm going to pick up the back windshield now. And then I'm going to lift up the boot. I'm going to lift up. This is like how it takes it. Like, okay, then we're going to unlatch the latches and then we're going to go back. And then the whole time you're like just getting completely poured on. So I do drive it. Well, it's just lately the weather's been inclement.
Yeah. It's a bummer when you have cars that are a pain that you can't drive in rain. Like my green cruiser, if there's a sprinkle outside, like, oh, got to pull it into the garage because it leaks on every corner. And, you know, it's just like, right. There's no weather stripping on any of it. No, that stuff. Oh, some updated news for you two, because nobody else cares about this. And you probably don't either, but you're nice. So my white cruiser, I've been calling about it on a weekly basis now. You know, I call at the beginning of the week, check on it, bug them on Friday. Don't forget to call on Monday. And so anyway, I called and Monday he called me back and said, the guy told me that your engine is going on the stand finally tomorrow. So it's scheduled to go on the stand. That was Tuesday. That was yesterday.
Well, they're going to think about maybe doing your job
sometime
this year.
Somebody thought about your name at some point this week. No, he said it was going on the stand and it would take, you know, maybe a week with all of the testing and all that stuff. He had everything to put it together finally. He finally got all the rings and all the stuff he needed. So
you got to start telling him. You got to say, do you know who I am?
He would say, you know, no, call back later.
Just walk in there with Josh filming you. And then like, what's this? Oh, I'll just ignore it. That's my buddy. I have a YouTube. I got like 4 million followers. But tell me, when is that going to be done?
Zoom in on their sign and then excuse me, sir, what's your name?
Yeah. So this is the engine. You walk right up. This is the engine that I've been waiting to get repaired for about a year and a half now. And then like, wait, who are you? Oh, this is my cameraman. We're just doing a vlog about my engine repair.
But so theoretically it is in process, actually on the stand being rebuilt right now, which means early next week I should be able to have the car towed there. And it should start, you know, really getting close to the end of it. So I'm very excited about that. Still, you know, hesitant because who knows?
But you could probably start a YouTube video now on this process where you break in to see if it's actually on the stand and you're recording every one of your calls. Like, this would be a great story because who knows what the outcome is going to be.
That's true. Yeah.
You should just get it just to have it. Better to have the footage and not need it.
Than of me breaking now. Into a building? I think that's footage yes. I don't want to have. Pretty sure. Could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure I don't want that floating around. Yeah.
So, just the document of this whole thing. Because, you know, it's not every day someone gets an engine replaced in a, you know, in a car they love.
Yeah. I did.
I had to do it. I had an engine replaced in a Mercedes-Benz, and it was very complicated. That was about 20 years ago.
I did get some footage when I got when I drove down to get the new engine. I did get some footage of that in case I wanted to put together a video about the process later on. And I asked the guy at the shop when he goes to put it back in, if I can come shoot some video of them putting it in and explain like how I don't have any idea how to do any of that stuff. And he was like, yeah, sure. I don't care. So
you got to show you driving with the engine on the trailer, because we remember that. Mm-hmm. And then show a calendar, like where the pages peel off for like 3 years.
3 years. And then
that like 1940s time passing icon.
The video goes from black and white to color over the time. Anyway, so that's coming up, hopefully. But Jimmy, did you say what you've been working on, or just the...
Oh, I just was, me and Jordan, that's just developing products like that is going to probably be my life from now until eternity, which is fine. It's what I do naturally. But I am getting the pool table is considerably closer than further away from being done. I got the base parts are really coming together. If anybody's been following on Instagram, I'm showing the progress every day. And I'm really happy with that. I have an end date of the end of July to try and be done. And I'm going to be going away for 10 days. But I'm going to leave myself in a really good position by the end of this day, because I go away tomorrow. But by the end of this day, I think I'm going to be in a really good position to, you know, just have a quick wrap on the finish. But then I still need to get the billiards company. Blatt Billiards is a New York company. This is their 100th year anniversary. Blatt's going to come in and do the felt on the table. And we're going to leave the table in my shop for the moment, and then... It's probably going to stay there for 10 years, and then we're going to figure out where to move it after that.
You said you're going away for 10 days. Are you coming to Ohio to visit me?
I'm coming. I'm going to be there. I'm going to knock. I'm coming to Cleveland, in fact, actually. That's on the other side of the state, though, right? You're in one corner.
Yeah, it's a quick 2.5-hour drive.
Yeah.
I'm going to – Total Boat is having a big event, so I'm going down there with a bunch of makers. We're all going to make boats. There's various teams, and each team leader – is an experienced boat builder, and I am the experienced boat builder on my team, if you could believe it. And
jokes on them.
That's what I'm thinking. So we're going to build a boat, and then the lightest person in each one of our teams is going to race it around the obstacle course. One paddle. So this should be fun. And then right from that event, I go directly to Cleveland to a welding class with Lincoln Electric. And there's going to be a couple of influences there. Derek is going to be my companion. Derek's traveling. Derek has a deal with Lincoln. So Derek and I are going to be doing that. And I think there's going to be about 5 other people, including Brandy Obey and Lucas from Man Made. And I forget who else. There's like 3 or 4 others. So that'll be fun.
Cool. Yeah. Total Boat reached out about coming to that event, and I really wanted to. It sounded like it was a lot of fun. I just couldn't fit it in right now, but hopefully next year. They've been trying to get me come up there and like see the facility, and you know, they seem awesome. Like every time I've dealt with anybody there, like they're great.
They're the best. They're the best team.
So I kind of feel bad I was turning them down and I can't come up, but it's, you know, not really close. One of these days. Everybody lives all north. It's hard to get up there. Up in New York and Rhode Island and stuff. Let's see. What have I been up to? We put out our video about the lantern. You know, I redid the lantern. And it didn't do well. And I'm not sure that I expected it to do well. But it didn't do as well as I expected. I don't know. I mean, whatever. Most of them don't hit these days. But it was a little surprising because it's like an old thing. I thought we had the thing I was really disappointed about, though, is that the beginning of the video was this whole Indiana Jones kind of sequence that we shot in the attic with like a smoke machine and a skeleton. I bought a skeleton for this video. And, you know, I was really hoping that would be fun enough to draw people in when they first saw it. And, you know, it did all right, but it didn't do as well as most things. So a little bit of a bummer. But got to move on. And so this past week, I've been completely redoing our back porch. We had this screened-in back porch that I spent a lot of time on as a kid. because there's a swing out there, and I just like would hang out with my grandparents and stuff. When we moved in, kept the swing, same swing as there, but we put all of our stuff on there. And then over the past 6 years or so, it has just continued to get weathered and full of stuff. And we have three cats, and so they destroy the screens on a regular basis. And I always had to replace the screens, and it was not made to have replaceable screens. That was one of the biggest problems. They were just stapled to the wood framing. And so I finally, I had an idea, and this was really funny to me because I spent the last several years with this idea in my head about I can leave the framing there, I can build on a little outer face frame and then make replaceable screens to push in from the backside. And that was just my plan. Like it's easy. It's figured out. Oh, we lost David. Hopefully he'll come back. And so then we finally put this on the schedule, made time to do it. And as soon as I made the first screen to pop into this little area, I realized that this screen is way too big. It doesn't have enough structure. It's not going to be flat. The sides are not going to stay parallel. And it just bent in. And it's funny because it was just one of those little details I didn't think about having to work around for several years. And I wouldn't have even thought about it until I did it and went like, oh, well, that's not going to work, you know. And so my plan kind of went out the window. But the cool thing was, in the process of buying the screen and the, you know, the kits to make the frames and all that stuff at the store, I looked over and I saw this like track that they make for screen and porches. And I glanced at it and I thought, oh, well, that's kind of like what I was hoping to do anyway. Interesting. Oh, well. And then I just went home and did the thing and it failed. So the cool thing was I had a built-in replacement for my solution. Somebody else came up with a really simple product that is a track. And, whoa, sorry, my dogs are barking. Somebody's here. Somebody came up with a track that is like, it's a spline track that you screw this track to the 2x4. You put your screen in it, you spline it. So it's, I don't know, you'd have to see it. It's very, very simple. But then there's a cover, PVC cover, that just snaps into it and it covers it
up. Looks like a frame.
Yeah, it looks like a frame. It's perfectly replaceable. Each screen can easily be replaced with no tools. You just pop the covers off, pull the splines out, put new screen in, you know. And it's a great solution that I wish I had come up with. But somebody else came up with it and it saved me a huge amount of time and effort, and the video was probably kind of saved because I didn't have to completely start over, rethink how I was going to do it, all that type of stuff. Do you have something, David?
I was, our screened in porch needs new screens like really bad. Hmm. They just flap in the wind. And so I'm really curious about what this track is called. So I'm going to bug you for a link.
Yeah. The brand is called Screen Tight. But there's actually a couple different brands. It's the same thing. You can get it at different stores under different names. But it just worked out really well, and it went up very quickly. Whereas building frames for screens is a little bit, it's not hard, it's a little tedious. This stuff is a plastic track with a plastic cover. You can cut it with a utility knife. It's got screw holes in it already. You just screw it to the 2x4s. You know, it's like super easy to do. And so I got the entire, and it's a big screened-in porch. Each screen is like 65 inches tall. Each one is about 42 inches wide. So, and there's like 9 of them. This is a lot of screen. But since I was able to get that done, then I could turn to the inside of it and do, you know, like build a thing for the cats to climb on and some shelves and some other stuff. So we tried to just do a big transformation video. To be honest, I don't think it's one of those that's going to do super well because I don't think people necessarily need to do what I did. I'm not sure how to market it, which is going to lead to what we're talking about today, but it has already made part of our house better to have it done because I've spent more time on the back porch in the last week than I have in the last 6 months simply because it's a nice place to be, you know? And so that's kind of what I've been up to. But
I just found a video of some guy installing Screen Tight.
Yeah, it's super easy and it's a great way to do it. And it's not expensive either. I mean, the screen costs the same as screen. You know, it's just you're buying a roll of screen.
And this video, he's putting it on the frame that exists that basically carries the wall. You made it in frames that go in and out?
I did it the same way he did it. I just put it on the 2x4s that are holding the whole thing up.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's what he's doing. Yep. So the screens are there for good.
Yep. Well, the tracks are there for good, but you can pop the covers off, pull the screens out, put in new ones, which is cool. So.
And they just go in traditionally with like that rubber
spline
wadding that pushes you. Mm-hmm. Looks cool.
Yeah, so it's a really cool... somebody did a good job coming up with a very simple solution for a bunch of different situations at the same time. I thought that was really cool. Anyway, so that's what I've been up to. But that kind of leads us to promotion. One of the things we were talking about is like... and I think we've talked about thumbnails and titles before at length. But one of the hard things these days is how to get yourself, how to get the stuff that you make, the videos you make, the products you make, the whatever you make in front of people. How do you get their attention? How do you get, you know, how do you promote your offering, whatever it is, to mm-hmm. the people that might be interested in watching, buying, whatever? And it's very different than when we all started this 1,000 years ago. It's like a totally different world. It's a different set of networks. It's a different set of everything. So mm-hmm. I think we should talk about how we're promoting things right now, what's working, what's not, maybe to help other people do the same. And then I would love feedback from other people listening on other ideas that we're not talking about, because I'll speak for myself. I'm muddling through this. I don't know how to do this. I'm sure other people have some good success, and I would love some.
Well, it's funny. You know, the impetus for this is Crummy sent me a thing. He said, you guys want to talk about mailing lists? So Roy, thank you. That's what started this, kicked this off. But you know what I thought about? I think about mailing lists. I think that I always ask myself this. I ask myself, if somebody hands me something and I go, oh, this is cool, I'm going to like preserve this somehow. So I'm going to stick it in that side pocket of my suitcase so it doesn't get lost, versus somebody giving me a thing and I'm like, I don't want to throw this out in front of them. I'm going to hang on to it for a minute. You know, like there's the difference. And I actually never do throw anything away. I always keep it all, just out of respect to whoever made anything for me. I keep it all. But the idea is like, what is that thing that's going to spark that, like give you like that, like, you know how your headphones look when you turn your headphones on, they go, bling. And then when the battery's done, they go, you know, that sound when somebody gives you something, you want that sound in your head to go, bling. Sometimes people hand you something and it goes, So you want to make sure, like, when you hand something or do something with somebody, it's that. And a mailing list, when I open my email and I see the mailing list from the various people that send me stuff, because I went to that website and I bought something and now I'm on the mailing list, I don't hear the big or the low sound. I hear nothing. I'm never going to read that. And I know I have a mailing list and my guys send out mailers. And thank you to the people that do buy stuff early, because Adam's always like, let's put this out to the people that are on the mailing list first, you know, when we offer up whatever it is. For instance, the mugs a couple weeks ago, we offered up 50 mugs and we sold most of them from the mailing list, because people do read the mailing list. But that's just me. So I always think about myself like, what's going to give somebody that high tone kick when I give them something? And for me, it's going to be a fun postcard. That's why every year when we do Workbench Con, I try and think of an interesting giveaway. This year I happen to have the sticker, so I gave away the sticker of the stained glass Maker Man. In the past, I always try and print something, so at least it's an exclusive, precious thing that people who go to that event are going to be the only people that get that for the most part. But I always try and think of something also that's handmade, but that's simply handmade. And I'll tell you, we talked about the razor blades. I started making the handmade razor blades in the beginning, and I actually never sold any of the handmade ones. It just cost too much money to make them and harden them and everything. All of a sudden, I'd have to sell them for $300 each. But when I finally found a factory to make them for me, I had a little bit of a moral decision. It's like, people are going to think I'm making these. I am making them, but they can't get the value. They can't get the quality from me. So I just got to let go, buy them, and then resell them. So I bought 2,500 at a time from factories, and they make them for me. They're knife grade. They're like kitchen knife grade. It's a kitchen knife factory that makes them. And everything was fine, but I did have a little bit of a moral dilemma. It's like, I'm so used to being in the process one way or another. In that case, I am in the process. I helped design it. I'm the one that came up with the marketing of the whole thing and the idea. It's funny, because when I first said to Howard, I'm like, oh, we need, I forget what it was, $15,000, $20,000 to buy this batch. He's like, really? I'm like, hey, either I'm going to have the coolest business card or we're going to have a successful product. I said, it's one way or another. And so now I have a successful product and a cool business card because I end up giving a couple away a month to friends and people that I meet. The other night I went to on July 4th, me and some friends went to a new friend's house. I'd never been there. Beautiful house. There was some new people there, all kind of like upper class Woodstock hippies. It was fun. It was a lot of cool people there. And the host of the party was a maker. It was a guy who makes stuff, but he's not on YouTube or Instagram. And this guy, Fred, who's a really talented maker, he made all the stuff around the house. And I thought to myself, Fred would really appreciate a razor blade. So I went to my car and I gave him one. And he was like blown away by it. And he was a little drunk and he kept pretending to cut everybody's throat with it. And then his wife was like, he's like, look at this. Now I have the power. He was joking around. And I took it away from him and I put the safety skin back on it. And I handed it to his wife. I was like, put him to bed. But the idea is like to see the excitement of somebody when you give him something like that. Like he's like felt the power. So the long and short of it is if you're going to give away a premium, it's got to be something that's fun. It should be something that's fun. It should be something that's interesting. That being said, you know, I meet people who for the very first time are making something ever in their life. So even if they make a little tchotchke and put a keychain loop on it, I could sense the excitement that they have when they give it to me. And you know, those are the type of things. It might not be the best premium in the world or the best marketing, but I see it and their excitement is still attached to it. You know, their love of learning. So out of respect, I hang on to those things as well. But in general, in a big way, it's got to be fun. It's got to be interesting. Fun and interesting. And it's got to have a cool factor. So, I work with a toy designer. This is just my quick story. And he would always say, I would always show him something and he'd be like, okay, now what would it look like if we put sunglasses on it? No matter what I made. Because he said, you put sunglasses on anything and it's cool. So he goes, like we would make like a little doll. We made a doll that is a puppet on the back of a spoon. My friend Bob, he's since passed away, but he's one of my inventor mentors. And we put a puppet head on a spoon so that when the puppet head talks, you could feed the kid and the kid pays attention to the puppet. I forget what we called it, but we actually did sell that product. But we made one with a pair of glasses because kids like things that are cool. And, you know, when Snoopy puts on sunglasses, he becomes Joe Cool.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. Everybody remembers the California Raisins. I'm sure everybody absolutely does.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's great advice for making the thing.
Yeah.
Once you have the thing, you've got the knife with sunglasses on it, then how do you get that to people? How do you let people know that you have a thing that they probably want or would make their life better or...
Two great ways. I say Instagram is one, and then just meeting people in person is the other. But Instagram, on a more tangible scale for the average person who is just trying to learn how to market, I think Instagram is important. And if you're going to have an Instagram, you should have a theme, and you should dedicate it to a theme. If you're going to have a cool picture of something you made for a client right next to, you know, the dinner or pizza you had with your kids last night, I don't think that's going to work well because people will be less interested in seeing the cool things you're developing. If it is, you're trying to market your skill as a maker. So you got to have either a dedicated Instagram. Like when Derek got started, I know Derek shuffled his Instagram around until he had an Instagram that was just about the workshop in the beginning. Like he didn't care because he wasn't a maker at the time. He wasn't a public maker. Obviously, he always was a maker. But now he's marketing his brand and the stuff he makes. He rearranged his Instagram to have just the Instagram for that. And I think that's important. And you got to have cool stuff. You got to have fun stuff and disperse information that people will want. And then if they want the information, then they're going to want more of what you offer, whether that's information or products.
Especially with the social media stuff, it's really important that you, between the promotional stuff, that you're providing something that's of value to the viewer. I think I'm pretty sensitive to over promotion. If I follow somebody on Instagram and they are constantly pushing this thing that they're selling or a contest or the services they offer, it's like, no. Every once in a while, I think it's okay, but it's important to provide value.
I can't stand when it's like, the fifth person that tags me in the thing is gonna be the thing that wins the thing. That's the thick.
Yeah.
There's like a category of people that follow and do that, but in general, it's just don't give me homework. Show me what you make this cool, but don't give me homework. Yeah. Don't give me something to read. Don't give me something to figure out. Don't make me email something. Don't make me fill out anything. It's the slightest bit of hurdle. No one's going to do it. But if you hand somebody something cool or you offer something cool, like now, like promotion, for instance, when something cool comes across on Instagram and it's like, buy now, I click it. And if it doesn't have, which now mostly nobody doesn't, but if it doesn't have a PayPal, I just say, I'm not buying it. I'm not going to pull out a credit card.
Yeah.
I will not buy anything that doesn't have a PayPal link ever, ever again in my life. Like I go to buy like a rubber windshield thing for like my Chevy. And I'm like, oh, they don't have PayPal? Forget it.
Huh.
I'm not pulling my credit card out for anybody.
Interesting. I noticed that Home Depot, about 2 years ago, added PayPal as a payment option to their website, which I thought at the time seemed like a weird, I don't know why, it just caught me as kind of strange. But over the time, because I often will buy things ahead of time and then could just go pick it up at the store to save time, that is the payment method that I use at Home Depot. And I, because it was easy, because it was an easy way to just connect it. It's done. It's my default payment, you know. But that's interesting. I don't think I would have thought about that.
My wallet sits in my car.
I don't think I thought about that as a kind of go, no-go option for buying stuff.
It's just 100%. If I click on something and it doesn't have a pay, like I'll buy like rings for ice picks from different suppliers, or I'll buy, you know, leather lanyard string, you know, for these smaller companies that are like, don't have like a huge website. And if they don't have PayPal, I just say, forget it. I keep searching until I find a company that has PayPal. Because, and this is my stupid thing, my wallet sits in the console of my car. My wallet is always in my car. It's never in my pocket. It's like everywhere I go anywhere, it's like in my car.
Dear man. Thieves.
Yeah.
Here's some info. No, this.
You can steal everything if you come around here. And like I'll be in the middle of the night and then something, there's no other option. I gotta like put my shoes on and trudge out to my car. It's pouring rain out or it's 2 degrees out. And I gotta, ah.
Okay. So the lowest barrier to entry possible for selling the thing that you have. Like that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Well,
I don't think I have PayPal on my website. I don't even know.
That's funny.
I'm gonna get beat up, but that's not my area. I got to tell the guys to put PayPal on my website.
Yeah.
Now that I've said it. But that's Adam and those guys. You know, they handle all that stuff. They're better at it than me. But I got to tell them they got to put PayPal on it. I think we do have PayPal.
David, what were you saying?
The PayPal thing is also important to me. I've done a couple of those videos where I buy every ad on Facebook. And I feel I always use the PayPal option because I don't want to give my credit card digits out to companies I don't know, and PayPal is the way to go just to protect myself. So PayPal is a lower barrier to entry, and if you're not known, you're not a well-known company, having that PayPal option just makes people feel a little bit better.
A little anecdote with that as well. So I'm in a bunch of Land Cruiser groups on Facebook, and there's a lot of like parts selling to, you know, back and forth within those groups because it's very focused on a certain vehicle or a certain time period or whatever. And so the first time I went to buy one of these things from this guy, he showed these parts. I looked at his profile. He looked legit. And so I talked to him about this part. He sent me some more pictures of it. You know, it seemed legit. So I paid him, sent him some money through Venmo because that's what he requested. And he scammed me, totally scammed me. I never got the stuff. He disappeared. He did it to a bunch of people. When you send money through Venmo as a payment option, at least at the time, I don't know if it's changed now, so don't be mad at me. But at least at the time, they had no mechanism to get your money back if it was a scam. You're sending just like you send to friends and family. The money is gone. The end. Through PayPal, you have some safety precautions, you have some coverage there, both as a seller and as a buyer. And, you know, there's limits to that stuff as well. I mean, it's not going to be a catch-all. But so after that experience with Venmo, I only use Venmo to send money to people that I actually know in real life. But all of, and as I let people in the group know, this guy's a scammer. They were all like, oh yeah, don't ever use Venmo. Like, well, nobody told me that, you know. PayPal is the preferred option for that, for the exact same reason that you just said. The reason I'm bringing it up is because, yes, it is a somewhat of a safeguard, so people can trust doing business with you even if they don't know you. And so, as another option, making that available is good to help you sell. Let's talk about the like media side of it. So not just, you know, you're making a thing that you want people to buy, whether that's digital or physical. But, you know, you make videos, you make music, you make something like that, media, and you want people to consume it, to watch it. It's really difficult right now, for me at least, to promote that stuff, to get people's attention because of the amount of, just the huge amount of media that's available all the time to everybody, along with attention spans that are very different than they were a few years ago for lots of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough. So people have asked me in the last couple of years, you know, I want to get started on YouTube. What should I do? And my initial reaction that I don't say out loud is, don't do it. It's way harder than you think it's going to be to get people's attention. But it's just the state of things. It's different. So what do you guys do now to get your stuff in front, the videos that you make in front of people? How do you get people to watch them now?
I will say, if you asked me this when we started the podcast 150 years ago, I would have said, you know, make sure you're on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter. I get it's insanely low traffic from Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter to YouTube. So nowadays, none of that even matters. That is just a way to communicate with people who follow you on those particular platforms. I say, if you're going to post on Instagram, keep people on Instagram. If you're going to post on YouTube, you want to keep people on YouTube. And now it's I try to focus on what people who watch my videos, because my YouTube video is my product. People who watch my videos, I try to figure out what they enjoy. I try to figure out what I enjoy and then meet somewhere in the middle. Sometimes I'm producing videos that I know like the audience will like. Sometimes it's more about me. But the way to promote your own YouTube video is to figure out who your audience is and make videos for them. It's really, really hard to bring in other traffic, except if you have a big email list. If you're lucky to have a big email list, that's a decent way to get traffic to your YouTube channel pretty quick. Out of all the social medias, like, if we're including email as a social media, it's the one thing that's like standard over all these years. It's like, one day Instagram will go away, one day Facebook will go away, hopefully. But I think email is just going to be here forever. So if you're building that email list and there's value in that list to the readers, I think that's the thing that's going to outlive everything. Email is the cockroach.
Well, and it's also the one thing that you have 100% control over.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, like, you can put something on any of the other networks and they can decide to take it down. You can do something with the way that they work and they can decide to change how they work at any given time, whether it's like, when you put it up, it's wrong, or you put something up and 10 years later, it changes to where that thing you put up is irrelevant. With email, you have direct access to people. You have to decide what it looks like, the tone, the delivery, the content, all of that stuff. But you are walking up to, you know, as best of a comparison as you can, you're walking up to somebody and saying the things that you want them to hear directly. Now, whether they ignore you or not is entirely up to them. So But mm-hmm. that's going to be the case everywhere. So you have more control with email, even though it feels like a very flat medium, a flat way to communicate with somebody. It is direct. So
it feels old, but it still works. That's why every single company has an email list.
Yeah. I know I said I ignore it, but I think you guys are making a good point.
It's
true.
It's one of those things that, you know, and it's not something I take advantage of like I should. We should be using it on a weekly basis to let people know what's up, both in media and with sales and all that type of stuff. I lost my train of thought. It's not something I take advantage of like I should, but...
You should.
I should. It's one of those things that as you build it up, you know, if somebody hacks into your YouTube channel, takes it over, and you have nothing else, you can write everybody on your email list and say, look, here's the deal. Here's the link to my new channel or whatever. You know, it could be the safeguard against... I just lost access to everything that I don't know how to get it back. Therefore, I can't tell people that I don't have access to it anymore. So the email is the one thing that you really can control.
That's a very good point. That's a really good point. But as far as getting my stuff in front of eyes, I honestly don't know what to do anymore. I think what we have to start doing in general is just market to a smaller audience, market to your core fans. Because the idea of getting a viral video these days is much fewer and much further between, because there's just so many people at the dance. You know, when you go, you're just hoping to get noticed. And then when there's 6,000 people there, the idea that you're going to get noticed is much higher than if there was 15 people there. So the idea that you're just marketing to a smaller core group of dedicated fans and friends and supporters. You know, I think more of us are going to start leaning more into Patreon. Me and Derek were talking about that. And there's a lot of guys that do really well on Patreon, and I don't take advantage of it. I certainly don't. I mean, I make, you know, a couple thousand dollars at the most on Patreon. Not even. I don't even think I'm there, because my fans come and go, which is fine. That's the way it is. But I think just in general, focusing more on the fans and less on bigger brands, I think, is really where it's going to have to be, because the fans want to support us because they want to see what we do. And it's, of course, amazing. And I'm very grateful for that. And to put more time and energy into marketing directly to your consumer versus marketing to bigger brands to just get paid to then be able to do more.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like I said, you can make more with less than trying to do viral videos. It's feeling more that way.
To that point, I think it's Pat Flynn who has the 1,000 true fans kind of theory, procedure that he has. Like, if you have 1,000 true fans and you can get them, those fans, you could replace fans with customers. But if you have 1,000 true fans and you can get them to buy $100 of product from you for a year, that's $100,000. You don't need social media with millions of followers.
Right.
You just have to make something that people want and people love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I think the Patreon thing, just to be like, give you my experience with that. And this is, I don't want to sound ungrateful. So let me preface what I'm about to say with, I am not ungrateful for the support that we have. For I Like to Make Stuff, we tried about a year ago. It was last August. We tried to make a big push to move the majority of our income to Patreon. That was the goal. And we were going out to California. We were making this video with Mark Rober, and it was the timing of everything. It was like, we really have to start shifting away from sponsorship stuff because it's going away for everybody. It's not going completely away, but it is definitely different than it was the year before or whatever. So we were trying to make this big shift to do exactly what you're saying, Jimmy, to ask people, if you like what we do, please help us on Patreon so that we can avoid sponsorship stuff. We can focus on a smaller group of people. We can, you know. And so we came up with, we tried to bolster our community, which is an amazing community. We have an awesome group of Patreon people and supporters on our Discord and stuff. Like, they're fantastic. But we tried to grow that group so that it was financially like a significant part of what we do. And so we made a push through the video, through email, through social media, in this one time to try to do what you're talking about. And I do know what I expected, but it did not go as I expected. There was a little bump. People did show up, but not in a way that was appreciable, not in a way that would change the way that the company made money going forward. And it bummed me out a little bit, not because people didn't show up, but because, well, that means we have to keep relying on sponsorship stuff or, you know, on the other stuff. Like, I was trying to make a significant shift in that moment, and it just didn't work. And I don't know if it didn't work because of me, because of who we are, because of what we do, because of the economic situation at that moment. I mean, there's a million reasons why it couldn't have worked. But I'm saying that as a counter to what you're saying, Jimmy, is that that's a great idea. That is the ideal, I think, to be directly supported by the people that like what you do. That's where I think everybody would love to be. That's where this podcast is, and that's awesome.
Right.
But getting to that is tough. Getting people to sign up and stick around.
You got to offer nudes.
To that point, any success is tough.
Well, yeah, totally. Making a transition, and the reason I'm saying that is because that is a transitional point in your business. If you want to go from corporate support to personal support, that is harder for me. It was harder than just saying, please, you know, we're trying to serve you rather than serve companies as much. It just didn't work. Didn't work for us. So, but like I said, on the other side of that, this show, this podcast, and we were talking about this before we recorded, is 100% funded by Patreon, and it's awesome. Like, the people that help us out have been here for a long time. They make it possible. They make it so that it's worthwhile for us to sit down and have these conversations and talk. They make it fun, you know. So I'm not saying that's not an option. I'm saying that we, in our way to try to replace sponsorships with that support that was already existing, we had trouble. So something worth making the effort towards, but it may not be as much of a slam dunk as you hope.
Yeah.
Maybe it's me. I don't know.
At the end of the day, I think it's all about just producing interesting content. And I'm not saying that I'm great at it. I'm okay at it because I've been able to make a career out of it for 12 years, but it comes and goes. I mean, you see someone like Colin and he just constantly comes up with the craziest stuff. And then I see the things he builds and I just think to myself, where does he have the time? He just seems like he's just constantly churning out these ideas, constantly churning out these huge builds, which takes a lot of time. And he doesn't seem like he has a huge amount of help. It seems like he does do a lot of it himself with Tom. It's crazy. It's a crazy lifestyle.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not going to say I'm not envious. I would love to live that lifestyle. But I'm ingrained in this situation here where I am. And I'm certainly happy. I'm totally happy. But I don't know if I could transition to something like, for instance, what Colin does. And I always use him as the benchmark for like what we all do because he's just huge and spectacular.
Yeah.
And obviously just keeps taking in fans, and I'm sure his finances are all taken care of. And he just keeps churning out views. And then I go, should I make a Zippa leather bag? Well, it's not a 20,000 pound jumping machine.
Yeah, it's not a floating tank.
I still want to do a zipper bag. I still want to do it. You know, so that's why I say we just got to kind of focus on the people that lean on us the most and market directly to them.
What Colin does is absolutely phenomenal and amazing. But when I see it, I'm just exhausted. I have absolutely no desire to do what he does. I can't outdo myself every single time.
Oh. How about with Mr. Beast, where he drives a train into a ditch, like that last video he did?
Yeah, I think
it's crazy. It's like, what?
I think the sensationalism is going to go away eventually, and it's going to get back to more real stuff. Everything comes in waves, and I keep hearing on different podcasts that I'll watch, and they're like, the being real is going to come back. There's the Ryan Trahans of the world who. Their budget for his video is you know, a penny or whatever it is, and the Mr. Beast type stuff is a fad.
I don't know how he.
I enjoy the Mr.
It.
Beast stuff.
I would love to agree with that. I absolutely would, but I know I not in a special way, but I can see the heart of people. I can see the heart of our society. And reality TV never went away. It just changed. And the reality TV thing is built on a sensationalism and something not personal, something not human. It's like this thing that people just voyeuristically want to watch. And it had a heyday for sure. It went up and then it dropped back down, but it's still there. You know, Judge Judy is still making TV shows. So, like, I don't think that the Mr. Beast thing is going to go away because as a society, we are just...
Bigger, better, faster, more.
We are the way we are, and I don't like a lot of that way we are.
Like, I can't wait for the next Whistling Diesel video to come out. Like, I constantly check. I don't do that with anybody, but I want to see him wreck another $400,000 car and laugh about it. And then I'm going to make my zipper leather bag that's going to get 20,000 views.
I think that's the
lane I'm in.
But yeah, I think that's an important thing to think about. It's like, no matter what you're doing, you're not Mr. Beast, unless you're trying to be Mr. Beast, and then good luck to you, sir. You know, like, you're going to do a thing that is not necessarily trying to hit the same parts of people that something that sensational is trying to hit. Like, I'm with you, David. I don't want the scale. I don't want the, well, now I have to make a bigger machine that can climb over my house. And now I'd have to make a thing that can climb under my house. And now I have to make a house that can move around. You know, like, I don't want that. I want the thing that I do to be valuable to the people that it's valuable to. That group is never going to be the Mr. Beast group. It's never going to be the Colin or the Mark Rober group. Those groups are just too big. They're too varied because I don't do that same thing. And I have to be okay with that. And I think when you're promoting whatever it is you do, you have to be okay with the fact that you are probably not the thing that you put out is probably not going to be TGIF. And for anybody that's too young to remember what that is, that was the set of Friday night shows that everybody watched on TV at 8 to 10 o'clock on, you know, Friday nights. It was...
What? What about must-watch TV on Thursdays?
It was broad appeal... This is for everybody, even though it's not great. It's just, you know, it's everybody watched it. And you have to decide or realize or something that, like, you're probably not going to be that. But that doesn't mean you're bad. It doesn't mean the thing you're doing doesn't have value. It's just you got to find the people that it has value with. So in my mind, the thing that I've been for several years now trying to figure out is, am I okay with the people, with realizing and accepting the fact that the people who like what I do, who care about what I do, who find it valuable, is a smaller group of people than I expected, than I would like for it to be. That's fine, but I got to be okay with that if I'm going to continue to serve those people. And so promotion is this weird thing where you're trying to expand that group of people that may or may not necessarily be into what you're doing. It's like, it may work, it may not work, but that's... If you're getting into this, if you're trying, and by this I mean making a thing and trying to get the rest of the world to like it, you got to realize that there's some push and pull. There's some roadblocks about audience size and potential audience and things like that that are just kind of baked into how people are and whatever it is you do, you know. So those are my thoughts on that.
It's tough.
It is tough.
It's all tough.
And to be honest with... As tough as it is, and all of the different things that you have to try to figure out how to get people's attention and how to get, you know, I can totally recognize how nice it must be, even though there's a negative, there's always grass is greener, there's always grass is browner to every situation. I can recognize how nice it would be to get up in the morning, put on the same outfit, go to a factory, pull the lever for 8 hours, go home, take that outfit off, and that's it. To do a factory job or a thing that get the work you do gets no specific attention, but it is valuable to a bigger thing, like, I can see why that is appealing to a lot of people, because you don't have to convince somebody that you pulling that lever is good. Mm-hmm. That you're doing a good job pulling the lever. You just get to go pull the lever and be a part of something that gets something done. That's appealing from that perspective. You know what I mean? And maybe that's because I don't particularly like attention and I'm in the wrong business to not like attention. But, but you know, I can definitely see how the separation between being seen for what you do and just doing what you need to do, those have different appeal for different types of people, and not everybody's going to like both of them, you know? Like, I couldn't... But It's funny, though, because Colin Furze was a plumber. Did you know that?
No.
He was a plumber before he started doing YouTube. Could you imagine having Colin Furze, with his energy, come in and be like, I'm going to fix your toilet! And just like, you get like a rocket-powered toilet. But the fact is, like, he did a job that was absolutely necessary to people. It made people's lives work better and stuff. But his personality, I don't know if that's why he switched, but like, he's got the personality to do something like way more, you know, out there in front of people. And but not everybody can necessarily ride those two halves of that thing. Like, you know, I don't know. Not everything is for everyone, I guess, is my point. There's a certain level of promotion about whatever it is you do that you have to find that works for you. And sometimes the level of promotion needed to get a thing in front of a big enough group of people may be more than works for you. It has been more than works for me personally in the past. So, word of warning, I guess, a word of context for people who might be trying to do this stuff. That's it. I'm done.
Yeah. You just got to make cool stuff.
Anyway. I mean, that's the goal, right? Is just to make the cool stuff and not have to worry about how...
I say it all the time because I'm always quoting Barry Katz. He's got to be undeniable, and then people will not deny you.
It's so true.
Be undeniable. It's not easy.
It all starts with a good idea.
It's not easy, and I'm not saying that I'm that all the time, but it's got to be undeniable, and you will not be denied.
The best promotion in the world is not going to do anything for a crappy product or a crappy idea.
That is very true.
It's true. You could have good marketing, and you know, I know some people in the business that spend all their time marketing, and I'm not going to say one particular person that I'm thinking of, but he spends all his time marketing, and he's got no substance, and it just like boggles my mind. I'm like, okay, everybody knows who you are, but what do you do? What is your product? What, like, now I know how to show my face a lot. But what I need from you is some takeaway. And the takeaway you're giving me is not enough. It's just an excuse to market. And it's just crazy because I just see it all the time. I'm like, he's so going down the wrong path. He's a talented guy. Show more substance. Show less marketing.
See, what's interesting in that situation, I don't know who you're talking about. But I am served constantly.
Even if I told you, you might not even know who I'm talking about.
I get served on Instagram constantly these ads for like business coaching guru type people. And half of them, I don't know what it is they're selling. They're really good at selling something, but the product is unclear. And which makes me think maybe this person you're talking about falls in this category too. I think there are some people that are really good at marketing, and that's it. And they don't have a product, but they're really good at letting you know that you should have a thing that you don't have. That's what marketing is. And so some people are good at marketing. And it's this weird thing where you get these somebody ads, and I'm like, man, this person has a 5-step program that I have to learn how to what? What is it that I'm learning how to do? It's 5 steps and I need it, but I don't know what it's going to do for me. But
that's Gary V. Like every time Gary V pops up, I'm like, I'm going to go into the closet and lock the door because I'm not good enough to be Gary V. But the funniest thing is that a friend of mine once said to me, we're at a get together, and he's like, what did Gary V ever do in his life except for just marketing?
Yep.
What does he do? And honestly, maybe there's an answer. Maybe he started some clothing company that I am aware of, but I didn't know he started. I don't know. But there's bad marketing because all I know is that Gary Vee markets marketing. But what is his?
He took a mom and pop wine shop and turned it into a $1 million business. He took his parents' mom and pop. And I'm not going to defend Gary Vee. I like Gary Vee, but every time
I watch some of his stuff, I'm thinking to myself, all right, I should just quit and go hide under the barn.
Well, but see, the thing is, like, I think there's, even though it's confusing to me that these people are marketing, and I get that a lot, at the same time, I'm bad at it. I'm bad at marketing. I hired somebody for marketing. So why wouldn't I take advantage of somebody's experience of marketing to help me market a not, you know, like a product? Like that, I get it.
No, I mean, obviously Gary Vee is successful.
Yeah.
And what's funny is after all the time I've seen him for the last 12 or 15 years, I didn't know that he had a wine company.
I only know that from his book. But yeah, you wouldn't know any of that stuff from his massive amounts of social media posts that are just making me feel like I did something wrong. No,
I know 50 Cent has a liquor company, because every single time he posts, even if it's a fist fight in the street or he's making fun of Busta Rhymes, his hashtags are all his liquor business. Mm. So,
yeah. Well,
it's just a different way of marketing.
There's definitely no answer or rhyme or reason to promoting the thing that you do, whatever it is.
I think the most important thing is the friendship connection you develop with your fan base. Is that connection you develop with your fans. And we all three of us have obviously a lot of crossover fans, but we each one of us have our own individual fan base that everybody on Instagram and YouTube. And you just gotta make sure that they're interested in what you're doing, if that's what you want to keep doing.
Yeah.
Make it fun and interesting and educational. And don't beat people over the head with all this marketing, like this one particular person I'm thinking about, just constantly markets, and talks about how successful he is, but never shows anything he's ever done. And I know he's done stuff because I know him personally, and it just boggles my mind. He spends about 80% of his time marketing and about 20% of his time taking his selfies.
Maybe you should just take more selfies, Jimmy. Maybe that's the answer.
That's the problem.
That's another thing too, is if you have an Instagram and if you just look at that home page of your Instagram and there's like more than three pictures of yourself, go into modeling. Don't go into whatever it is that you're trying to do.
Yeah. Anyway. All right. You guys got any other thoughts on this?
Nothing's easy. Yeah. I'm gonna quit. Nothing I'll see you guys easy. Next week.
Nothing worthwhile is easy. You have to work at it.
Yeah, that is true. All right. Well, big thanks to our Patreon supporters. I mentioned them earlier, and I absolutely mean it. They make this show happen. They make it so that we can cover the cost of doing the show. It gives us incentive to get together and continue to do it. It's helping us have incentive to talk about doing a live show. We're brainstorming ideas for that. And I did make a list. I don't know if that was after show or not, but I made a list that we talked about. Everybody coming up with ideas. I'm supposed to have five. I have four. But we're making progress.
I have a few.
Big thanks
to... So, Dave, I'm going to answer your email back, Dave, after the show and put my ideas into your email chain.
Cool. Me too.
Yeah. I'll put them in a spreadsheet. I'll send it to you guys for approval, and then we'll push it off to the production dude.
Cool. So we are trying to make that happen, and a big part of that is because the Patreon support. So big thanks to everybody over there that helps us out at all different levels. I mean, people give, you know, a dollar up to a bunch more, and it's all appreciated. We have a list of a bunch of those people in the show notes of every show. Not everybody, but a lot of people are listed there. And then there's a top group of people that we always call out because they go above and beyond. And there's a funny little change this week. See if you can catch it. It's a joke that I didn't put in, the patron put in, and they changed their name. See if you can check it.
Oh, boy.
Crabtree Creative, The Web Ranch Woodworks, Michael Menegin, Warren Works, Stu Morrison, The New Janky Workshop, Scott Oram, Sean Beckner, Odin Leather Goods, Chad from Mancrafting, Chad's Custom Creations, Chad at Lowen Designs, Works by Cello, Albers Woodworks, and Corey War. Rich from Lowen Design changed his name to Chad because we already had two Chads and he thought it would be funny be the third Chad. So, got you, Rich. I caught you. But, you know, there's a bunch of other people like Mike Wagner, Ryan LaValle. I don't know how you say your last name, Ryan. But there's a bunch of people that help us out. And we seriously are grateful for all of it. So, they all get the after show as well. Everybody, no matter the level, they get another podcast that's after this podcast that's after. What were we going to say?
The Deadheads, they are the Grateful Dead. They have the Deadheads. Kiss has the Kiss Army. Making It Podcast, we have our Chads.
Our Chads. Chads. You are all Chads. If you want to join that crew, if you want to get the after show, if you want to help us out, you know, we're very grateful. You can go to patreon.com/makingit. Sign up for whatever level makes sense to you. Do it as long as you want to, as long as you think it's valuable, and then don't. You know, that's okay too. But we've had a lot of people come and go over the years, and we're just grateful for the support. So go do that if you want to. And if you don't, just glad you're listening. I have something to recommend that I don't think I've talked about before, but do you guys have something to go first?
Sure. I watched, I'm just looking at my history. I watched a great video on Veritasium on the Oppenheimer. If anybody wants to know what Oppenheimer
is. I started that last night.
It seems like there's, the more young people I meet, there's like a bit of a disconnect like with real history.
Like you think?
Where the Revolutionary War is. What does the Civil War mean? And what is the World War on one, World Two, you know, World War Two, and who is Oppenheimer and the A-bomb? Like, it's funny. And I always think of a time, like, for instance, when you think about the Egyptian, the reign of the Egyptian, what would we call it? The Egyptian period
Pharaoh?
Of time. Oh. No, like that, Egypt was 5,000 years, right? That's something like that. Some people say 10,000 years, the Egyptian civilization. You wonder at the end of, like, let's say it was 5,000. At the end of that 5,000 years, you wonder how much of the people knew anything about the beginning of the 5,000 years and how much it has changed. And, you know, there's no computers, there's no internet. It's just images in stone. We're only 250 years old. And there's so much information fading away in the young people. And I'm not saying the Egyptians did it right. By the time 5,000 years was up, they probably knew nothing about where they came from.
Yeah, we know less about them than we think we do, honestly, because there wasn't as much record, but yeah.
Right. But just in general, I'm just saying, so I'm saying that to you people that are like, Oppenheimer, who is that? Isn't that a financial company? I'm like, I don't know. I don't know what the solution is. It's just funny when you meet somebody and you make some reference and they go, what is that? You go, that's the reason you're here. Like, get interested. You can't force people to read or to be interested or to be curious. Anyway, that's it. Check out Oppenheimer. There's a lot of curious stuff in there.
I can't wait
beginning
to see
beginning of the nuclear age.
I can't wait to see that movie.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Apparently, that movie. What's the guy that made it?
Nolan,
what's
his name? Christopher Nolan.
Christopher Nolan. So he left one studio to go to this new studio, and I don't remember the names of the studios, but he made a deal with this new studio that this particular movie has to be in theaters for so many days before it's released on streaming, like way more than any other movie out there. A lot of times there's a co-release streaming, and then this particular studio cannot put out any other movies in that time period. Like, this is supposed to be the movie that changes the way studios work,
like in the middle of the strike,
in the middle of the strike, in the middle of the streaming wars. This movie is more than just this movie. It's supposed to set a tone for Hollywood.
I hate to say it, but I think the movie's going to be a huge flop because it's not sexy, exciting. It's not a Marvel movie.
I can't wait to see it.
But I mean, that's our generation. The generation that really matters is 18 to 25, and this movie's, I guarantee you, nobody's going to want to watch this movie. No one cares about the 1940s. No one cares about the history of World War II. And I'm talking about that marketable demographic, 18 to 25.
Yeah.
They could care less. And not even one of them is going to go to that movie. There isn't going to be one 25 or 35-year-old in that movie.
That's a bold claim.
I'm right.
Okay.
I don't know nothing, but I know that. I don't know what Gary Vee does for a living, but I know that.
I disagree. I disagree. We'll see how it plays out, but yeah,
we'll see. I think, and it ties into our marketing speak today, but one of the reasons the studio cannot put out any other movies within this time period is so they can spend time marketing this movie properly. And I think
with no actors and no red carpet,
because they will spend these months only promoting this movie, I think they'll figure out a way to reach out to these 18 to 25-year-olds and make them watch. I think.
Well, did you see Philly D talked about, and a few people have, but I just happened to see his most recent thing about the studios are going to start hitting up influencers, and I don't think any of us are going to fall into that category, but influencers to market movies, you know, like the Casey Neistats and those kind of guys.
Why are they not doing that now?
Well, because right now they're the only people that will market movies, because people in the movie business aren't going to market movies because they're not going to cross the picket line. And then a lot of people, for instance, Philly D was saying, if you are an influencer and you already have a deal, honor that deal. But if you get approached to do a new deal, don't cross the picket line and don't market any movies that come to you. And it would only be like big influences, like, you know, like James Charles and these kind of guys, you know, that have huge audiences. Like I said, I don't think any of us fall into that category.
Interesting.
Or like Colin could certainly fall into that category where he might get offered to market a movie right now because there's nobody else to do that. You're not going to have any of the actors go on any of the talk shows, which there are no talk shows. So right now, the only marketing avenues is what is YouTube and Instagram and Facebook. And who's going to host those conversations except the influencers that have big audiences.
And
people are promoting, don't cross the picket line, don't take those gigs. But you know, it would be type of thing, like, you know, if anyone, I'm not getting offered, but if somebody offered me tens of thousands of dollars to talk about Oppenheimer, I might be like, okay.
Yeah.
It's not happening, but yeah, it's just as an example.
I mean, you're probably on the list for Barbie. Just want to, you know.
Yes.
A movie that no desire to see, but there's so much hype about it, I might just have to see it.
Yeah. I don't think it's what you think it is. I don't think it's what I think it is. But I don't know. Do you have a recommendation?
It's not a movie for a 48-year-old bald dude.
Well, I don't think it's a kid's movie. That's the thing. I think, you know, I don't know. Whatever. Anyway. Do you have a recommendation, David?
I do. I just discovered this channel a couple nights ago, and I freaking love it. And I've only seen two videos. It's a channel called Posey. And it appears that he started off as a like lo-fi music channel, but his last two videos don't really have anything to do with music. And if he continues this direction, it's going to be amazing. But this last video is called Dots, and it's basically about halftones. And that sounds like a boring topic, but his visuals, the way he talks, I think I was served this video because I watch some graphic design stuff and design stuff, and this video got served to me and I clicked on it and I was just like, whoa, this is so good. And then the previous video is all about VFD displays. So if you grew up in the early 80s, you're very familiar with the toys that use VFD displays, or what are on most stereos built in the last 30 years, the little meter is probably a VFD display. And they're just so well done. I'm in love with this channel, and I've only seen two videos.
Interesting. Cool. Well, mine is for a video game that I don't know that I ever told you all about. So you remember Rob Scallon, the guitar player that I've worked with a few times on YouTube. He's amazing. He makes awesome music videos about music and plays all sorts of instruments and everything. Well, we were hanging out in Chicago when we did the B-Bender guitar, and this was pre-pandemic, so I don't even know, 25 years ago, something to that effect. We were hanging out, and he showed us this video game that he was working on, that he had been working on for a long time. So this is in, you know, now, this was, he started it 5 years ago or something, I don't know. He was making a mobile game about playing guitar, but it's not like a Guitar Hero game. It's like an adventure game. And recently, excuse me, a couple months ago, he put out the trailer for this game because it's actually working. The reason he showed it to me was because I was a character in the game, and like the first guitar that you would get as a weapon was the shovel guitar that I made for him.
What?
Which was like so cool. And now I don't know that I'm still in the game. That was a very early thing, so I don't know if I'm still in it. But either way, there's a trailer out for this video game that Rob had made and worked with a video game company to make a legit video game. It's coming out on Steam. It's called Fretless, and it's an adventure music game where you like level up your guitar playing skills by fighting monsters and stuff, and then like you get guitars as weapons. You get different instruments as weapons. It's awesome. So I'm going to put a link to the trailer. It comes out next year, I think. It's so cool. And I'm just excited for Rob's great. So I'm excited that this thing he's been working on for so long is actually going to happen and come out. So
I'm watching the trailer now. It's got a cool like vintage pixel look to it.
Yep. Kind of it's not 8-bit, but it's kind of old school looking.
Yeah.
It's very, awesome. Very cool. So good for him. That's what I got. You guys got anything else?
Oh, you know what? I wanted to talk about that get-together we're going to do at the factory in Arkansas.
Cool.
I'll pull up that information. So we're going to have at the end of August, I'm going to be out in Arkansas at the factory that we opened up. And at that factory, we're going to have a get-together. And I'm supposed to have the information right here readily available, and I don't.
August 29th, I think.
Oh, yeah, you got the invite.
I'm planning on being there, yes.
Let's see. Wait a minute. You got it. August 29th. I'll talk more about it. But August 29th in Northwest Arkansas, Russellville, Arkansas. We're going to have a open house at the factory. So if you're in that area or if you live close to that area. So we got plenty of time to push that. So I'll give more specifics, time, window. That's it.
We should get David there and do a live show as a test.
I'm just now finding out about this. So...
You got plenty of time possible. To make up an excuse. You
yes,
got like
yeah.
a month.
We'll talk in the after show. We'll talk in the after show because this episode is an hour and 22 minutes so far. So we
got. Oh, wow.
We're over marketing.
Okay, we are. There's way too much of us.
That's a good way to end it.
Cool. Well, thanks for listening, everybody, for a long time. And we'll see you next week.
Thank you.
Love you. Thank you.